Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time listening to the Guelph Politicast, welcome. Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just making life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talked to Cornelis Clevering, the Marijuana Party candidate for Guelph in the 2008, 2011, and 2015 federal elections. Clevering will be talking about his 3.5-year struggle to get the results of the 2011 election in Guelph overturned in the wake of the revelation that 7,000 automated phone calls went out to Guelph citizens, directing them to the wrong polling station. He's been unsuccessful in his latest effort, filing for a leave to appeal with the Supreme Court of Canada, failed this past December. We'll recount Clevering's law and order-like journey in a moment, but first, my usual public service announcement. Guelph Politico is crowdfunded through Patreon, where you can contribute on a per-monthly basis of any amount you feel comfortable using PayPal or your credit card, and all that money goes to maintaining a locally sourced independent media outlet in Guelph called Guelph Politico. Through your generous donations, you'll be paying to keep the Politicast on the air, as well as regular coverage of city council and politics in and around and concerning the Royal City. For more details, click on the giant orange P on the right-hand side of the Guelph Politico page, or go to patreon.com/GuelphPolitico. And now on with the show. In the 2011 federal election, Frank Valariate beat his nearest competitor, Conservative Marty Burke, by 6,183 votes. Because over 7,000 robocalls were made on E-Day 2011, Cornelis Clevering thought that it was a good enough reason to take the matter to court, get the vote overturned, and hold a re-election in Guelph, which would hopefully be free from interference. What followed for Clevering was a one-man, multi-year legal struggle worthy of a Mr. Smith Goes to Washington tale of how one man fights the system, even if he seems inevitably doomed to fail. Last week, the only person charged, tried, and convicted of the robocall scandal, Michael Sona, was appealing his 9-month sentence at the Ontario Court of Appeal in Toronto, an appeal that proved fruitless as both his and the appeal on behalf of the Crown was denied. It was a reminder that there remains a great many unanswered questions about this case, and that the lone conviction of Sona does not mean justice has been served, and for people like Clevering, they are still fighting mad that more hasn't been done. This podcast was produced as part of a piece I did for Groundwire Radio, which aired across Canada this week on community radio stations. In it, Clevering recounts his journey through the nation's courts, why he feels no sympathy for Sona, and what it will take for him to get a good night's sleep in regards to Canada's democracy once again. I caught up with Clevering last week at the University of Guelph. So, perhaps to begin with, you brought the appeal when you came back to Canada in, I'll say the date generally, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was about spring 2012.
It was June. Okay. I came back in May and I filed within 30 days of my return to Canada, according to the law.
Right. So you filed, it was 6 months after the election, or?
No, it was almost a year, but what happened was the news broke while I was in Thailand about this ongoing investigation. And some news services then broke that news, and all kinds of questions were asked. Subsequently, Mark Mehran, the chief electoral officer, appeared in front of Parliament. Mm-hmm. That was March 29th of 2012, and announced that there was going to be an investigation going on with respect to these misleading robocalls in Guelph, which was the heart of most of the complaints that were phoned in to Elections Canada, So because of that, the Council of Canadians decided to take out some legal action because they felt that these robocalls affected like 6 or 7 closely fought ridings. And suggested that, you know, this was improper, and they called for new by-elections in these ridings. And they filed within 30 days of, I guess, the announcement of the investigation, which was like a year after the election.
Right.
So.
So you came back in June, or you came back in May, filed in June, and what was the first response, or what was your first step, I guess?
Well, I came back to Guelph, and like news was, everybody was talking about this ongoing investigation. So I said, well, is anyone like taking legal action to like stand up for the people that were misled and all the rest of it? Is there anyone taking out a charter challenge? Because Section 3 of the charter says, you know, elections are supposed to be free and fair. Well, what happened in Guelph? Was it free and fair for like thousands of ordinary citizens?
Right.
It was an important issue. No one decided to take legal action for a number of reasons. One is Frank Valeri had won by over 6,000 votes, so they felt, oh, well, you know, everything's on the level. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then there's the cost associated with taking legal action. And three, where were the facts? There were no facts. Mm-hmm. The chief electoral officer saying, well, our investigation is ongoing, but we are not prepared to release any of the facts. So are you going to go to court with no facts?
Right.
You really, you know, have to be... You have to persevere. So
your first step was?
My first step was I filed under the Elections Act.
Right.
Suggesting that the electoral results were tampered with in terms of the results, were not accurate, and that the elections was, they were, a fraud had occurred. And if a fraud has occurred in an election, then, you know, you have a legal right to have the matter reviewed.
Right.
You know, a fraud or, what is it, the other word, fraud and irregular activities or fraudulent activities, etc.
So this was an appeal to Elections Canada, yes?
No, this was, you have to go to the federal court.
Okay.
So that's the first step. You go to the federal court, you take on an application, and then, you know, in time it's heard.
Right. And how much time did it take to get heard?
Well, you see, because the Council of Canadians had launched their action, a hearing was launched, or rather, a hearing was heard in Toronto in September. I'd have to get my books out. I think it was September of that year of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And the Protonotary decided to sit on the decision. She didn't dismiss it. The hearing was held. And in the meantime, Justice Mosley was hearing what the Council of Canadians had to say in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And here I made an error. I should have intervened. I should have joined with the Council of Canadians and gone to Ottawa in front of Justice Mosley. But what happened was I thought I could, like, jump over all of this by intervening when they took the matter to the Supreme Court of Canada. I was convinced that the Council of Canadians were going to go to the Supreme Court because of the national issue. And because the issue involved charter rights, basic charter rights involving, you know, the democratic process in Canada, a very, very unique opportunity to have the courts rule on this. And advance, electoral jurisprudence in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So,
your feeling was because most of the complaints happened here in Guelph, perhaps you stood a better chance standing alone. If, am I putting thoughts in your head that weren't there, or?
No, I don't think so. I think in hindsight, I made an error by not joining the Council of Canadians. And then the Council of Canadians made a huge error by not raising the charter issue at trial.
Right.
It was all about proving a fraud, which they succeeded to do. Well, then go one step further. You have to ask, well, what impact did this fraud have on the democratic process?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't ask that.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask that. And when
so it was almost like you're making two different arguments. They were talking about the fraud. You're talking about the charter issues.
Sure, but it was based on the same evidence,
right?
The body of the facts. Sure, they were saying, you know, because of the fraud and because of the mathematics involved and what the outcome could be, these votes are all in question.
Right.
My approach was different.
You know. So. You eventually do get a decision, and the federal court says you waited too long to to file?
No, it was actually it was a protonotary.
Okay.
These are not senior judges. They are sort of gatekeepers.
They're gatekeepers.
So Madam Prothona, it's a protonotary, Malzinski, ruled that almost a year later now.
So we're in 2013.
You're in 2013, September 2013, that two things. I had, it was inconceivable that based on my factual record, which didn't exist, of course, because I didn't have any facts, to prove that a fraud had taken place. And without this, it's inconceivable that, you know, I could win. I could win in asking for a new by-election to be called.
Right.
So, and then at the end, she also said, well, and he's out of time. Like, he should have, like, filed while he was on his remote island in Thailand without any knowledge of how widespread the whole thing was. So, so she dealt with the fact that, yes, she agreed fraud had been established, but no, I had no chance of winning because I didn't really have any facts that would prove that the charter was affected. It's a catch-22.
Mm-hmm. Just chicken and the egg. So what was your next step after that?
Okay, well, I went to Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped over everything because under the Act, if fraud has been proven, you have an automatic right to be heard in the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And Justice Wagner of the Supreme Court ruled, no, your motion to be heard is dismissed. You have to go back to the federal court. And not just the federal court, but the also federal court of appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. I filed papers from Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all written material. You can do that. Rule 369, I think it is. So it appeared in front of Justice Hughes of the federal court, a review of the Prothonotary's order.
Right.
And he ruled that I was out of time. No, sorry. I had to apply for an extension of time because you only have 10 days mm-hmm. from the original order to file papers. Mm-hmm. But because I went to the Supreme Court and they took 2 months to decide to dismiss the motion to be heard, I was out of time. So I had to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And asked for an extension of time, which he granted.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me 10 days. I refiled my papers from Thailand with the assistance of the federal court.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 weeks later, he reread my material and dismissed it on the grounds that I had filed the original papers late, which was not true. I filed it within 10 days. So he didn't have to deal with any of the merits about the charter issues, the fraud, nothing like that. It was just a focus on the time.
Right.
And so went to the Federal Court of Appeal.
Mm-hmm.
They said, yes, you're right. Justice Hughes made an error. You filed your papers on time.
Mm-hmm.
But we feel you should have known 30 days after Mark Marand entered Parliament, on the 29th of March, 2012.
Okay.
You had 30 days from that time. You should have known that, you know, a fraud had taken place based on what Mark Marand had said in Parliament. Of course, what he said was, we have no facts. We're not giving you any facts. This is an ongoing investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't mentioned. They said, well, you should have, you know, filed your papers within 30 days of that time and dismissed the matter. They also said, well, there's going to be a federal election, so this whole thing is rather moot anyway.
This was last summer?
That was last summer.
Right.
And, of course, the administrator sat on this case for like a year before it went before the Federal Court of Appeals. So, like, it was in the court for 3 years, just dragged out until finally the whole thing was made moot by the call of a new election.
Right.
Okay. So, that didn't stop me. I felt there was still merit in the case.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the Supreme Court of Canada again to look at the matter
mm-hmm.
on the grounds that the Federal Court of Appeal had made three errors. One was they should have taken a broader view of the issue before them, like not just the time issue,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, the integrity of the electoral process, what effect this fraud had on the charter.
Right.
So, taking a broader view, I challenged the Prothonotary, Melzinski, she had allowed the Council of Canadians to proceed on the same facts. She decided to dismiss my facts on the similar grounds. She allowed the Council of Canadians to proceed on the barest of facts, because they had no facts. I had exactly the same facts, but she refused to allow me to go forward. And the third was the challenge to the charter.
Right.
That all this fraud that Mr. Sohn and the Conservatives and even the Liberals were in on robocalling that that critical moment before the election.
Right.
So I asked that based on what had occurred in this writing, that the Supreme Court of Canada begin to define what they mean by the integrity of the democratic process.
Like, and this was
that's never been defined.
And this was the decision that came back in December. Am I right?
That's right, on the 17th. Yeah, they refused to hear it. The Supreme Court refused to hear these three issues. Like that, primarily that the fraud that occurred in the writing of Guelph was so severe that it warranted a Section 3 analysis. You know, which, you know what Section 3 means under the Charter. The right to a free and fair election. Everyone has the right to vote. It has to be conducted in a manner that is consistent with the Constitution and what we perceive to be, you know, the parliamentary democratic process in Canada.
Right.
All of that was like up for grabs because of what Sona and others did. And that was never heard. That charter issue, up to this very day, was never heard. And it wasn't heard when Sona's appeal occurred a few days ago. The Crown was speaking, oh, well, you know, he injured democracy, this and that. Yes, he did that. But what about the charter issue itself? It was not raised.
So, if to take a break from the timeline for a minute, did you have any legal help doing this, or is this just you in with the law books somewhere looking all this up on your own?
Primarily, I'm a graduate of legal self-defense. It's a the Church of the Universe. No, I'm serious, Adam. The Church of the Universe has a school called legal self-defense. So you learn how to conduct yourself in a court of law. Write the material, read the rules, read the law, go to court, present your arguments. Everyone can do that.
Well, it's certainly impressive, considering, you know, this is difficult subject matter in terms of the charter. I mean, you're getting down to like the bare essence of the charter. You're dealing with a situation where, when you began the challenge, there was no suspect. There was barely any evidence of a crime. Basically built a case for yourself from scratch and took it all the way to the Supreme Court.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, to get back to December, the justices didn't even hear your case. It was, they saw there was a file you had posted, but they're not going to hear it.
Well, they read your material called the Application for Leave to Appeal. It's a I think I might have flashed that copy of the book around.
Yeah.
It contains all the previous decisions of the lower courts.
Yeah.
And then the written work explaining why, you know, here it is, explaining why it's called the Memorandum of Argument. Memorandum of Argument. And you have to explain to the court why your case has to be heard. What's the merits that they should be examining? So
it was, in layman's terms, it's an application to hear your case for the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And so,
based on the lower court decisions, like Madam Melzinski, the Federal Court of Appeal, you know, Justice Hughes, all those orders were in the book for the High Court to read.
But they decided against, for whatever reason.
Well, this is it. What reasons are they? I noted that the judges 2 days ago dismissed the appeal with Mr. Sona. There was an appeal by his lawyer, appealed by the Crown to increase the sentence, right? And they just threw it out. And it was clear to me that they want to forget this matter and get it out of the court as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. I honestly do, Adam. And this whole issue of, putting our democratic system under the microscope, that makes them very uncomfortable.
Right. So you were in, let me just wrap up your case first. The Supreme Court denied you your leave to present. Where does that leave you now? Are you out of options? Are you out of venues to take this, or is there still roads you can take?
I don't think I can anymore. This whole issue of, an examination of the charter is long gone. Now, Susan Watson feels that if there's any indictable offenses still to be had mm-hmm. under the criminal code, some charges could be brought to ex-conservative managers, people that were in on what Sona did.
Pierre Poutine himself.
Well, you see, Mr. Sona was only one of many. Mm-hmm. I mean, this whole thing, don't forget, Guelph was not the only writing guy that was hit.
Right.
There was like hundreds. So obviously there was other things going on. There must have been Ottawa that were involved, so that's the whole issue. If some evidence comes out in the future that they were in fact involved in creating these fraudulent robocalls, they could be held accountable. But, we've had a new election, we have a new prime minister, things are getting kind of slim for that to happen.
Right. You were in the courtroom at Ontario Court of Appeal. You said that you feel like people are just wanting to get this over with, sweep it under the rug.
No, not people. I think people want to.
The people who are in charge of the case. Then.
Well, no, the judges. The judges don't want to have to deal with this any longer.
Mm-hmm.
For them, it's over, and all they had to do was dismiss the appeal, and the whole Sona thing would that's it. There's nothing left to be had. Sona could appeal to the Supreme Court, but he's only appealing a sentence, and I don't think he can appeal to the Supreme Court if it's just about a sentence.
Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied with... It's not what we hoped, right? For those of us who were generally genuinely concerned about the implications of this, mm-hmm. to put one kid behind bars for 9 months is not what we hoped. But
no, there should be more. There are others, he stands out, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. The argument, I think, on the defense's part was that. Or actually, the argument on both their parts, the defense's part, was that it's too much, putting too much responsibility on him, the 9-month sentence, that the Crown's was not enough responsibility, that it's not enough of a deterrent. So as someone who's been fighting this fight for over 4 years now, can you sleep at night knowing that perhaps someone has gotten away and perhaps will get away with this crime?
Well, I'm having trouble sleeping at night for a lot of different reasons. One of them is because, I should have went in front of Justice Mosley and it would have been heard. The other is that that opportunity was lost by the Council of Canadians, not to go to the Supreme Court and have this matter heard. I thought that was too bad. But I can understand it cost them a lot. I'll sleep a lot better when Justin Trudeau does what he said he would, that he would change the Free Elections Act and would give, the electoral officer more power for prosecution and investigation in the future, should this ever happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if it does happen again, well, who's going to be held accountable? You see, this was a precedent that they could have acted upon.
Mm-hmm.
And through some folly of my own and, folly of others, because it was an outrage throughout the country. You know that. People were protesting everywhere about this.
Yeah.
And that the courts failed, really, in their fiduciary duty, except perhaps for Justice Mosley, to really embrace the issue, all this fraud, and what was the impact on democratic process. No, they never did that. So do I sleep better at night for that? Well, I guess I did my thing. took me 4 years.
It's true.
I mean, I could have just thrown the towel in, you know, after Melzinski made her order.
Absolutely. I don't know if you read the piece on iPolitics that Michael Harris wrote about Sona's mental state going into being identified as a suspect in the case. The episode where he describes his attempted suicide. Does that make him any more sympathetic to you?
No, why should it? He got 9 months. I don't know if it's fair or not. It's all symbolic anyway. He did a wrong thing. You know, him and his other cohorts tried to, circumvent the democratic process. So it's a serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel sympathetic for him at all. What? Why? Has he been remorseful? Has he apologized? Has he said, oh, this is a terrible thing that I did? No, he's kept his mouth shut.
Mm.
And, like, what's so great about the guy? I mean, he's like a conservative zealot, you know? And so, and he hasn't recanted. He hasn't shown any indication of the impact and the effect of what he did.
The flip side is, too, that he had this career in front of him that he worked hard to achieve. He was working in a cabinet minister's office. He was a prominent staffer.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone. And he got so low, he was by himself in a tub with a gun in his hand.
Well, he's stupid. Come on. Why not, like, blow the whistle on Morgan or White and any of these characters? It was a cabal. He just, you know, the reason he got 9 months is because he's not admitting to what else was going on
mm-hmm.
in the Conservative Party of Canada.
How about you? You said you don't sleep much at night. So what does all this cost you personally?
It cost me a fair bit of time and money, a couple $1,000. But I learned the other day they want to send me back $1,000 of the initial deposit, so I can get that back. I've learned to navigate through the courts again a little better. I've learned, you know, what to do and what not to do. That, you know, like I screwed up here and there, obviously. But you know, listen, all this wouldn't have occurred had Frank Valeri not stood in the way, like, day and night, hiring expensive lawyers to say, oh, well, there are no facts, you know, he's got nothing to go on. Look, he's the representative of this community. He was the MP that should have stood up and said, oh, you know, something terrible went down. Let's work with Brother Case and see what the courts say. Maybe if they, in their discretion, decide that the election was incorrect or, you know, damaged democracy, then okay, I'm ready to, like, stand up for democracy and we can hold a by-election.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't. He did quite the opposite, you know. He did everything he could to derail the process. And, you know, the whole idea that I was late, well, you know, Frank, there's a bigger issue here. It's a democratic process. You look tired.
Me?
Yeah. You had a long day.
It has been a long day. But let me wrap up by just asking, what are you going to do now in terms of this? Your legal roads are worn out, but I assume...
Well, for this, I mean, you know, it's finished. I got other interesting things. I'm getting more involved in the climate change movement, primarily. Mm-hmm. And the whole issue with marijuana is sort of exploding, too, because the Supreme Court has ruled... mandatory minimums are no longer constitutional.
Yeah.
Justice Felon has ruled that people can grow their own marijuana if you have a production license,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time ruled that the regulations are going to be of no force and effect within 6 months, 3 months now and counting. And then there's Justin Trudeau who wants to, like, legalize small amounts of marijuana by next spring.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm always interested in that.
And once again, that was Cornelis Clevering, the Marijuana Party candidate for Guelph in 2008, 2011, and 2015. People across Guelph and across the country are still pursuing a full investigation of the robocall scandal and pushing the federal government for electoral reform. And if any of those issues are important to you, feel free to get in touch with Elections Canada at elections.ca or get in touch with your local member of parliament. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The theme for the Guelph Politicast is provided by the Crazy Pills and their song Break It Down, which is courtesy of the Free Music Archive. The host of the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to all past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Sources Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can, of course, donate to the Guelph Politico Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating. And thank you to everyone for their ongoing donations. They are much appreciated. For all the latest political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.